The Work Lab podcast from Microsoft answers the questions that keep business leaders up at night. Like, how can I reinvent processes for the AI era, from customer service to sales to HR? How can I prepare for AI to fundamentally transform jobs, companies, industries, and the whole economy? Don't panic. Tune in. Each episode of Work Lab brings you the top experts, hard data, and actionable insights to help you future-proof your organization. Check out Work Lab, that's W-O-R-K-L-A-B, no spaces, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Second Life, a podcast by MyDomain.com. I'm your host, Hillary Kerr, and for those of you just tuning in, which I'm guessing is most of you since this is our very first episode, Second Life is a podcast spotlighting women who have made major career changes. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, for our very first episode, I'm talking to the woman the New York Times calls the most influential hairstylist in the world, Jen Atkin. She works with every major celebrity you can think of, from Bella Hadid to Chrissy Teigen to Khloe, Kim, and Kourtney Kardashian, not to mention Kendall and Kylie Jenner. As if this doesn't keep her busy enough, she's also the founder of Maine Addicts and Maine University, and most importantly, the CEO and founder of Way Hair Care. She also has over 2 million followers on Instagram, and even better, she is an amazing person and someone I have been lucky enough to call a friend for well over a decade. Welcome, Jen Atkin, and thank you for being my very first guest.
Goosebumps. I just got goosebumps. You make me sound much more important than I really am.
I don't think I do you justice. Okay, so Jen, obviously you're super entrepreneurial and hugely successful and have built a full-on empire. But I want to go back and talk about your early days, your salon days. When did you start working in the hair world?
I moved to LA in 2000, so 17 years ago. And then I did kind of odd jobs. I didn't have money. Really wanted to work in a hair salon. And I would go do the Allure salon directory guide because that's all we had back then. Mm-hmm. And I would cold call salons and just see if anyone was hiring for a receptionist because I just wanted to get my foot in the door to a salon. And
where did you move from?
From St. George, Utah.
And did you have a plan? Did you have money in your pocket? Did you have an idea of what you would do to support yourself while you were doing that?
Nothing. I feel like you just leap at 19 or 20 years old. I had a Honda Civic hatchback and about $300 to my name.
That's kind of crazy.
It's crazy. And it's so true. It's crazy. I came out with my best friend, Lindsay, who you know. And, you know, we just kind of made ends meet for a while. And then I finally...
How did you do that?
Oh, Hillary, you don't want to know. I'm just kidding. I worked at as a receptionist for an architect firm for a minute. What else did I do back then? I'm trying to think. I worked for a music supervisor, which was fun because I was like, oh, I can go to concerts. And then finally, one day I got a call from one of the salons and they were hiring for a receptionist. And it was called Estilo. It's still on Beverly and Martell here in LA. And I got to within the first year, I was like running and feeding Stevie Nicks and Bette Midler's meters. And I thought I had made it. I was like, I can go home now. That's all I need.
So then were you hustling at the same time? I assume, did you know you wanted to be a stylist? Had you planned on going to beauty school? What is that whole process like?
You know, at the time, I was I grew up Mormon. I really was very sheltered. And so I was, for 3 or 4 years, I was really finding out what gay men were, what Jewish people were. I had friends from all over the world. And it was this mixing pot of culture. And I was just kind of I think taking that all in. And then, you know, being a receptionist was really exciting because I got to not only learn how to interact with clients and how the stylist, what they were doing right and what they were doing wrong, but I got to really learn the actual business. I was handling money and I was, you know, seeing these stylists who at the time, this was in 2003, 2004. And at the time they were getting success and spending their money in crazy ways, either drugs or clothes. The joke was, you know, I knew a lot of stylists who had no money in the bank, but a lot of clothes in the closet. So that was my first, you know, real entry into this whole beauty world.
Okay. So then you decided to become a stylist and you have to go to school for that, right?
Yes. And I, again, didn't have any money for that. I was managing the salon and, you know, putting aside as much money as I could. But, you know, my parents didn't really have the means to kind of support me or help me in any way. And I think they also were like, this is just like a phase and she's going to come home and get married to her high school boyfriend and have babies.
And settle down.
Yeah. They're still waiting for that. So, yeah, I had to go to school. And so what I did is I just researched, you know, Vidal Sassoon Academy. What else was it? Tony and Guy had an academy. And they were all like $20,000. And that was just unheard of for me.
So what did you do instead?
So I looked up a program. Somebody had come into the salon and told me that they knew of an occupational center downtown. And so what you could do, it was state funded. So you could actually go. And thank God they had this program. And I hope it still exists today. But you could go and get your apprenticeship hours in the salon, which goes towards your license. And so I would go in the morning and I would, for about, I think, 3 to 6 months, I would go in the morning and do class all day and study for my state board exam. And then I was a waitress at night at Luna Park.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy. A hostess, not even a waitress. I wasn't that cool. And then I was at Luna Park, got my license. And then once I finished my acquired hours, at the same time, sorry, I was assisting at Chris McMillan Salon.
Okay.
In getting my hours. Maybe I was at a different salon. I was at a salon on Robertson called Cush.
Ah.
Yeah, this is so long ago. Forgot about this. So I was there as I was getting my hours and my training and just killing two birds with one stone.
So you're going to school and studying. You're working as a waitress. You're also working as an assistant and having those hours count towards your license. So that is an insane amount of work. You realize that, right?
Yeah. And also like finding time to date like Italian bartenders.
There's always time for that, I feel like. So then what happens next? Like what was your next big break?
So next big break was I really wanted to study under really great hairstylist. And I met Andy Lecomte through friends. We knew each other just socially. And he at the time was like, he was doing Nicole Richie's hair and Lindsay Lohan and Madonna, who he still works with to this day. And, you know, I just really loved him. And he asked me, it was like the best day of my life. I remember he asked me, he was like, I have my assistant is now graduating. And so I wanted to know if you wanted to come and assist me just for temporarily. And that temporary 3 months turned into 2 years. Wow. And it was so much fun.
So what kind of stuff did you guys do together?
Andy was the first person that really taught me on-set etiquette and how to really set hair. And then, crazy enough, he asked if I wanted to go on Madonna's tour. And I got to go and do all the dancers.
That's insane.
Yeah, at 26 years old.
How long were you on the road for that?
We were gone for about 8 or 9 months. And literally, it was all over the world. And I met some of my greatest friends on that tour. My friend Sophia Boutella, who you now know is like a crazy movie star and is in The Mummy. It's incredible to watch. Like we were all just kids, you know, traveling around the world. It's any wonder we all made it back with all of our no bones broken.
Do you feel like that was like graduate school for you in some ways? I mean, having to work on that many people for that period of time where it was just like so focused.
Yes and no. I mean, it tends to become Groundhog Day because you know what you're going to do and everything is so planned and, you know, you only have like 3 minutes. What that did is it prepared me for later on in my life when I did runway and backstage shows because you have to be able to perform and you have to stay calm and no matter what's happening, like you didn't get that second ponytail holder in that pigtail, you just sent the girl on her way. So that really, I think what that tour did for me too is made me realize how big the world is. You know, and it was a big eye opener for me because I was like, you know, in this little LA bubble and I thought like, you know, Hollywood is everything. And I think just being able to go and actually see the whole world, I was like, wow. And I also had an appreciation for coming back to LA.
What happened when you came back to LA and what year was that?
So it was beginning of 2007. And, you know, I'd done my 2 years with Andy and I was just so excited about the experience I had. And it's funny, I was building my clientele at Chris McMillan. I had gone on the floor and I remember I used to actually send a cold email out to all of my contacts because I was so like touched by, at the time Madonna was working with the Raising Malawi Foundation. And so I remember like inviting my friends to come in and I'm like, I want to do a day in the salon and then we'll give the money to charity. And you know, that was my first like actual networking I think when I got home from that tour and I was just like, you know, I want to do something good. And I wanted to invite friends in because now I had my chair and I was so excited. And so I really spent, I'd say probably 2 years, like being really diligent, the first at the salon, the last to leave, you know, that was probably the hardest I ever worked.
I remember this is around the time we met. So we started Who What Wear in October 2006, and we were next door to you. And I remember meeting you and seeing you, and you were, I mean, you had like this crazy work ethic. You were, you said yes to everything, I feel like.
Yeah.
In the best possible way.
Yeah.
So then is that, tell me about that transition a little bit too, of you were still doing stuff in the salon, obviously, but then also starting to do red carpets. And what was that process like?
Yeah. You know, I really loved being in the salon, but I also had a love for editorial and like red carpet events. And I wanted to do more of that. So it kind of organically happened. I think as you're in the salon, that's the best place for a stylist to really network because so many people are coming to you. And I would have publicists come in and I would have like assistants to different celebrities come in. And you just, that's the best place to network. And so it just kind of like organically shifted into, you know, me trying to manage the salon like twice a week and then doing session work, you know, the rest of the week and just working for free a lot back then.
Okay, so you're totally successful as a hairstylist. You have your celebrity clients, you're working with designers, you're booked months and months out. Then you do something that's kind of crazy on paper. It's 2013, and you decide to start a website, specifically Main Addicts. What in the world made you think, okay, here I am at the height of my career as a hairstylist. I should start a website and become a digital content creator.
What year was Instagram created?
That's a good question.
Probably 2015. No. I'm trying to think of the timing because...
Was it all around the same time?
Kind of. And I think, obviously watching you and Catherine, I started to realize that there was really nothing out there in the digital space. And there was no site that really like created community among hairstylists. I started Main Addicts for a few reasons. First thing is education. And, you know, I think about the hard work that I put into getting to New York and getting to Paris and schlepping pre-Uber, pre-Postmates, pre-Airbnb. And, you know, I think that education is the most important thing as an artist. And I think I just wanted to create a space where everyone could be connected. I wanted a place where brands could show new products that they're coming out with. So, you know, people are aware of that. I wanted to connect consumers with, again, like these amazing talents that are creating the red carpet looks and creating the looks backstage. And I wanted everyone to kind of have this playground.
To that point, I do think it's also worth pointing out that while beauty professionals have sort of higher profiles now and are talent in their own right and have the following, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
For a very long time. I mean, I remember when we first started Who What Wear and we would cover beauty things before even we launched Birdie and we would do interviews with Pat McGrath. And I couldn't believe she'd get on the phone with me to talk about the beauty look she created for Dolce & Gabbana. And but no one was asking her to do stuff like that. It was she was delighted that a reporter was asking her about it. So I think that, I mean, even though it's only a few years ago, there wasn't a community to your point and there wasn't a platform and there wasn't really a place by pros for pros, but also for the world at large to celebrate.
Yeah. I mean, every day I look at Main Addicts, I swear I'm just so proud of my team over there because for me, if I would have had that at 26 years old and 27 years old, a place to just go and like get inspired, you know, we have like an amazing Pinterest page where the girls like update it daily and you can get inspiration for looks. And I do you remember in the salon, I used to cut out pictures.
I have it in
you
my
do.
Notes.
Oh my God.
You had a binder.
I had
and
a
then an iPad.
Binder. And everyone thought it was so crazy because I would hand my clients this binder and I was like, it's just so much easier to talk about hair when you can see it. And, you know, a curl, a wave, they're very different. So I would create these little like almost like a yearbook and it would be like short hair, medium length hair, long hair and different hair colors. And so, yeah, I kind of just put that, you know, on Main Addicts and it's so fun because everyone, like even my friends will tell me that they go on our Pinterest page to find inspiration for their next look.
100%. Okay. So In February 2016, you launched your own line of hair care products. You're the CEO of Way. And again, this requires an entirely different set of skills, I would imagine, from product research and development, packaging and marketing, selling the line itself. And obviously, 2016 is when it launched, but you were working on it for years before that.
Yeah.
How did you do all of it? And how did you figure all of that out?
I cried a lot. You can ask my husband. That was such a crazy time. Honestly, I feel like the dust is now settling, but it was just go, go, go. You know, I had my main addicts team. We would have our meetings in my kitchen around my dining table. And then I would get on the phone and call my partners, and we'd figure out like when we could fly to meet with different laboratories in Southern California and in Texas and in New Jersey. And it really, honestly, I have to say, everything I do, I'm never afraid to ask questions. And so when it came to Main Addicts, I wasn't afraid to ask you and Catherine and your team any questions. When it came to formulating, I called Sonia Kishuk, who's been a really great mentor to me. I called Andrea Lieberman from ALC. I called all of these women who were building these brands. In a way, it kind of helped you skip the line. Serge Normand had a really great quote that I read in Allure, and I had it on my station. Do you remember? I had it like taped to my station, yeah. And it says, don't be jealous of your peers, be inspired by them. And that still carries on.
So you have this great team. And I feel like that's also a whole different skill set too, of learning how to be a boss and learning how to be a manager and learning how to hire. So you were also honing that at the same time. Did you take to it very naturally? Was it something that you had to figure out over time?
I realize now that it is really a skill in itself, being able to delegate. And something I keep thinking in the back of my head is working smarter and not harder. And I also am a firm believer in hiring people, letting them know what the result needs to be, and letting them do it their way.
What role would you say social media played in all of this? Has it helped or guided or?
It's created. I think, you know, the rest of the story from me doing the shows, and I got to work with John Galliano, which was amazing and such a great moment. Something that was kind of like a life-changing moment was when I met Kim Kardashian. You know, and working with Kim and the family, it's now been 6 years. And, you know, I think knowing Jessica Alba and watching what Jessica's done, I met Jessica when I was a receptionist at Estilo Salon. So I've known her so long. But I think just, you know, watching all of my friends and these entrepreneurs do their thing has been such an amazing, like, I think all of our friends, like, we have such a great tribe of girls that, you know, we all inspire one another and encourage one another, and no one's catty and no one's jealous. And we really were all rooting for one another. And I think we all kind of, you know, helped raise each other up.
I agree with that. And I think that's also very unusual in this world, though becoming less so. I think we also had the thing where we looked at our bosses and some of the women who came before us, and they didn't have a network the way that we do. And I remember when Catherine and I started Who What Where, it was very intentional in our heads that we wanted it to be a place, that we wanted our company and the people who we surrounded ourselves with to be people who helped lift us up rather than, you know, compete in that negative way.
Yeah.
That there's room for everyone,
yeah,
to do their thing and to be excited.
I think that's
for
our generation. You know, because I think about hairstylists too. Like, once I would explain to my peers, like, no, I'm trying to help promote you. And they were like, what? You know,
you
it's just such a weird concept. But going back to your question about Instagram, I gravitated to the instant I had it. I just thought, what an amazing free marketing tool. And Instagram was just that outlet for me. I also grew up Mormon and I did a lot of scrapbooking. So Instagram to me was just the modern way of scrapbooking my life.
What advice would you give women who are considering making a leap in their own careers? Like, how will they know it's the right time to make a change?
The one thing I think about in the past, and as women, I feel like we tend to take care of everyone around us. And I still struggle with it. We're self-deprecating. You know, we're taught that we need to, you know, we just need to not think about yourself first. And I think that's wrong. And that's something I had to work on a lot, where I was like, you know what? It's okay to be selfish. And I think when you're in any, whether it's a relationship or a job or anything that doesn't feel good, if you're like waking up and dreading what you're doing, change what you're doing immediately, because you have one life. And, you know, if it's a partner that you're with and that person is not supportive of you and that person doesn't, you know, if they feel threatened by your success, or, you know, they're just, even if it's a friend, it's crazy to say, but like, there's people in my life that I've let go because I just never felt like I felt like they were holding me back, you know? And it's hard to do that. But at times you need to be selfish and you need to take care of yourself because it's your life.
What advice do you have for other women out there listening right now who don't know how to push past their fears or doubts and make a big change in their lives? Because it is scary.
It is scary. But, you know, I always say to even clients, I feel like I'm a pseudotherapist after all the years I've spent talking to women in my chair. And I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, when people say, I don't know, I just don't want to leave, you know, my boyfriend or, you know, my girlfriend, I just don't, I'm like, it's one weekend and you're going to call them over. You're going to get your stuff and it's going to be awkward for like a minute, but then you're going to go get over it and you're going to be so happy. And when you get in that apartment by yourself, you're going to feel like so much strength and you're going to feel, you know, independent. And I think just you have to take the leap. I love Catherine, actually, when we did our little town hall meeting together, gave a great quote where she said, being an entrepreneur or taking that risk is kind of like using Waze. Where Waze takes you out to a left-hand turn and you have to go in front of traffic and it feels weird and scary and, you know, but it's going to save you time. And that's like the best analogy I can think of.
I love that. On a slightly different note, how do you handle rejection? Because it's, you know, it's pretty inevitable part of life. And I think it can be tricky to try and take the emotion out of it. But I also think it's really important for women, especially if they're doing something entrepreneurial, to have that sort of mental toughness and grit that they can bounce back from, whether it's actual rejection or perceived rejection or difficulties.
Have a folder in your Instagram of memes that are inspirational and positive to look back on, because you're going to need them. And I think rejection, especially in beauty and hair, I remember, you know, losing jobs to certain people and really having to like work on, because your automatic, you know, instinct is to be jealous or to be angry or to feel less than. And I think, you know, it's something that I've even taught partners in the past. I'm like, you are holding yourself back. I firmly believe in positive thoughts. And I think that you are holding yourself back if you hold on to that energy. And, you know, I think in hindsight, every door that has closed has opened another for me. I think you just have to learn to not take things personal. You don't know the whole story most of the time. It does take time, but I think, again, like having that good support group, like if you're feeling rejected or you're feeling something, talk to somebody about it. Take a friend out, get drunk, get it out, move on.
Dance it off.
Yeah, dance it off.
Well, I always feel like too, there's that thing of you can't control what's happening, but you can control your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And you can control how you're processing something.
Totally.
And so often it's not about you. It might not have anything to do with you. So you can't let it get in your pores and make it this really personal thing.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's just not.
And just holding on to that is just, it's not good for you. You know, I think it's
like drinking poison to like assault someone else.
Yeah, totally.
Something, it's like, how's that going to work?
Totally. And it gives you wrinkles when you frown.
Yes, no frowning. Okay, a couple of quick questions that our audience, I put it out there on Instagram yesterday, and I said, what would you ask Jen? First question, what was one moment in your career when you felt like you truly made it? You're such a badass businesswoman. How do you personally define success?
You know, success to me has never been about money. Success to me is creating. I think making a difference, making a change, feeling like whether it's like making a client feel good in my chair, somebody that's like going through something and making them feel good about themselves. A lot of times it's not even about the hair. It's just about, you know, having that boost of encouragement. And that's amazing to me. And then I think, you know, watching my girls, like watching Alex and watching Alex Brown, my old assistant, you can follow her at Hair by Alex Brown, and Justine Marjan, and like watching these young girls, because like I said, back in the day, like I didn't have any women to look up to. And so for me to like create these mini-me's and have these girls, women are just badasses. We're great at multitasking. And, you know, I never wanted a girl assistant in the past because I was like, I don't want the emotional, like I can't handle a girl that cries. I can't deal with it. And I've come to now realize that girls can multitask like nobody's business. And it's so like success to me is watching those girls go on and have success. Like that feels so good. You know, another success, a moment I knew I made it when I married my husband. Like that was honestly such a scary, do not cry, Hillary. It was such a scary, like such a scary idea to me to like be married and like be held down by a man. And, you know, I just never, I had this like chip on my shoulder and this like, you know, fear of what like a companionship or partnership could be. And I feel like that to me, getting over that and being like, wow, this is somebody who actually really roots for me and I root for him and nobody's taking anything from anyone. And it's just, I didn't really know that that existed. So for me, that was a huge, huge success in my life. And being able to do what I love is success.
Can I tell you mine of yours?
Tell me.
The Gwen Stefani Vogue cover.
Oh my God, that was a great moment.
You called me and you were so excited.
No, that was amazing.
And I remember that's a specific milestone, I feel like, in someone's career. And people get so excited about you. But I also just remember that one moment where you're like, I'm doing a Vogue cover.
Guys, that was like a full Anne Hathaway moment in Devil Wears Prada, because I was literally just at home and I got a call from her manager and they're like, can you be down to the studio in like 15, 20 minutes? We're shooting the cover of Vogue and, you know, things just weren't going the way she wanted. And I just like literally threw on whatever I could, like raced as fast as I could and got down there. And that was such an amazing, crazy, life-changing day. Yeah, it's crazy. Those moments of
I still have a copy of that because I was so proud of you.
No. Yeah. Do you really?
Yes. Yes.
So see what I mean? Supportive girlfriends.
That's a huge thing.
It was really great.
Really excited. I was really excited.
Yeah.
Okay. Any secrets or tips for time management?
Oh goodness. Again, I kind of rely on apps. I rely on technology. You know, my assistants and I use Trello to make lists together. My main addicts team, we've used Slack before in the past. I'm all about communication. So whatever can make it easier, obviously like Uber and Postmates and all of it play a big role in my life. So thank you, Postmates, for feeding me.
I remember when you Postmated Pinkberry at a work dinner.
Did I really?
Yes, it was amazing.
That sounds like me.
It was great. You want a different dessert. I understand that. Five of the most important things in your life for staying organized and managing stress.
I would say my notebook that's in my purse at all times. My shared iCal with all of my teams. Obviously email. I mean, does that count?
Sure.
Yeah, my email. Two more to stay organized.
Or manage stress. Like, I feel like you like a massage.
Oh, soothe app for sure. Yeah. And then I would say, just looking at my phone right now, actually, I have Shake Shack app as well. Oh, I have shared iCloud photo albums. So that's really helpful with my team. Like when we get like UGC from Way and people are posting, you know, things or we are doing events for main addicts, like we all have a shared iCal and Dropbox. I mean, I couldn't live without Dropbox.
I know, it's the best. What advice would you give yourself in 2006?
Don't worry about it. Just eat it.
Yeah. What's your best travel advice?
My best travel advice would be, when you check into a hotel, go straight to the gym and get free water bottles there.
Best tips for air drying your hair?
Way Wave Spray and the Dyson Supersonic Diffuser.
Who cuts your hair? Jen Atkin.
Jen Atkin hair. I cut the front and my assistants usually cut the back.
That's amazing.
But right now I'm taking our supplements, so I'm growing my hair out.
Which supplements are you taking?
The Thin and Oily, because I have oily scalp.
And that, on a side note, Jen's supplements, which are part of The Way, mm-hmm. are amazing and something that you worked on for 3 years, mm-hmm. before they actually hit the market, and they're new. Yeah. They're available on theway.com.
And Sephora.
Yeah. So you should buy them immediately. Thank you so much for joining us, Jen.
We're done. Oh my God.
I'm paying attention. I'm watching the clock. You got stuff to do.
Oh my God. I love you for keeping me on time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun. And I hope everyone out there listening gets inspired to make changes if you need to and be smart with your money. That's my advice.
So you guys all can follow Jen on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Jen Atkin Hair. Check out maineaddicts.com for all things hair and go to The Way, again, that's OUAI.com, to snag some of Jen's incredible hair care products and supplements. Thank you all for listening to our very first episode of Second Life. And that's about it. For more interviews with inspiring women like Jen who've taken the leap to pursue their passion, visit mydomain.com. We have a whole series of Second Life stories for you to peruse.
We also want to know who you would like to hear from. So shoot us an email at secondlife@mydomain.com, or you can direct message me on Instagram at Hillary Kerr. That's HillaryKerr. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please don't forget to rate and review us.